All right, well, let's get started then. So I just want to welcome everyone to this latest installment of the Link Developer Roundtable Sessions. It's a regular ongoing series of presentations that we give about various Link APIs. And today's session is about the speech development with UCMA, a UCMA focus. Today we have Mark Parker, our senior programming writer, who wrote, I don't know, most of the documentation for speech, right? and including the majority of the sample apps for speech development, so as far as UCMA goes. So it's great to have you here. And we also have Doc Lee here, who will jump in and answer your questions after the presentation. He's a senior development lead here at Microsoft, working in the speech group. Without further ado, we don't have any sessions coming up to announce, so I think we're done with the housework here. So I'll just hand it over to Mark, and why don't you get started?
All right. Thanks, Kai. I'm going to just start right in with my slide deck here. Talk a little bit about the demo that I'll present in just a few minutes. The basic germ of the sample that I'll present was one of the UCMA Quick Start samples that did an outbound audio call, and I used some of the code that was in a sample that showcased the speech recognition connector and another sample that showcased a speech synthesis connector, which are two UCMA classes that can be used to bridge the divide between UCMA and the Microsoft.Speech API. And I put together an application that we'll look at here. I actually put together two applications because one application is the UCMA part, and another application is a Silverlight application that runs in the conversation window extension of Link. And we will see that, but I won't really talk too much about that. Most of my focus here will be on the speech synthesis and recognition aspect of the application that I wrote. What my application does is it makes an outbound audio call to a Link client, and that causes the conversation window extension to open in the Link client. The Link client is already set up to be able to run this Silverlight application, which shows a form on the page, and you'll see how that works in just a bit. So once my application calls the Link client and opens up the conversation window extension, then the Link user is ready to interact with the UCMA application. The interaction would be something like, I'd like to fly from Seattle to Dallas. That audio goes over the wire to the UCMA application into the speech recognition connector and into a speech recognition engine, where a small grammar that I wrote will parse that audio, pull out the semantic items such as the city that you're flying from, the one you're flying to, and then package that stuff up to send back to the Link client. So that's basically the outline of the application. The audio that goes to the UCMA application, as I said, gets parsed, and what goes back to the Link client is two different things. There's a string that goes back through the conversation context channel and is taken apart and displayed in the user interface in the conversation window extension. As well, there is some synthesized audio that goes back, and you'll see all of this.
So just to be clear, you're actually, this sample actually has a speech recognition and a text-to-speech component and also a UI component simultaneously.
Well, the UCMA application has the things that you mentioned. It does speech recognition and speech synthesis. Mm-hmm. What we'll actually see, we won't really see, there's not much to see with the UCMA application.
Okay.
But what we'll see is the user interface in the link conversation window extension. And that just sort of shows what's coming back.
Uh-huh.
Both the synthesized speech, which you'll hear, as well as the string that is sent back through the context channel, or the conversation context channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a mix of the two different
UIs. Right. And
the focus here
is not so much on, is not at all really on the context channel and the Link Silverlight application and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The focus is really on what's happening on the UCMA side.
The
purpose of showing the Link user interface is just to show you what this is doing. But I'm not going to go into any details about that.
Okay, great.
All right, so let's go to the demo now. If you get things started up here.
Okay, and I'll just mention, there should be access to download this PowerPoint presentation from the conference for those of you who are joined in live. So feel free to do so if you wish. We are recording, and I will post a recording of this presentation in about a week. If there's anything you missed, don't worry. You can view it, and we'll put that up on Channel 9, and I'll post the link to that on the forums. Only presenters can download the content. All right, let me see if I can fix that. Okay, so if you tried to download, you couldn't before, but I made a change, so go ahead and try to download. Able to do that now.
One turn.
So you can share your desktop?
Oh, I thought I was. Sure, I am here.
Okay.
And I think I need my iPad on. There we go. Why is not?
So click on this button. Stop.
Okay, so the next thing we need to do is, so hold on for a moment, folks. We're changing some audio settings here so that you can hear the text-to-speech and the various audio. So I'm just going to mute for a second. I'll be back in 30 seconds. All right. Can everyone hear us? All right, great.
Okay, so now you see the user interface and link. The conversation window has opened, and I'm going to try this out. I would like to fly from Seattle to Dallas. Okay, as you can see, I'm going to exit here because we've seen what it does here, and I don't want to confuse things. What I said was, I'd like to fly from Seattle to Dallas, and I didn't hear that. I didn't hear the speech synthesis, the TTS. Let me try it again. I would like to fly from Seattle to Dallas.
Okay, so it's doing the speech recognition part. It's picking that up. We're just not hearing the audio through our external speaker here. So let's just try this one more time.
I'd like to fly from Seattle to Atlanta.
That might have actually been the issue, so.
Okay.
Try again.
I'd like to fly from Seattle to Denver. Your mic isn't working. I would like to fly from Seattle to Denver.
Okay, well.
It picked it up. It recognized it.
Yeah. So the outboard speaker stopped working. So let's just continue on, and we'll have to follow up with maybe another demo after the fact.
Where do I go now? Oh. Okay. Sorry that the text-to-speech wasn't appearing. I think we saw enough examples to show that the audio that I was speaking went to the UCMA application and was recognized and recognized correctly, and the string that was sent back to be displayed in the Link Silverlight application was working as it should. And what it did, what the recognition engine did was to pull out the semantic items of the city from which I want to fly and to which I want to go, and it made up a number as the price of a ticket. That string was sent through the context channel, and a string also was synthesized, but we were having problems with the speaker, so we couldn't hear anything. This has been working perfectly up to now. We tested it yesterday, and it worked perfectly.
And we tested it just now, too. Yeah, it must be. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what all is involved here, because there are several APIs that are involved, one of which is, of course, the UCMA API. Another is the speech API, as present in the Microsoft.speech assembly. And what I won't talk about is the Link Client SDK API. which was involved in displaying the stuff in the conversation window extension of Link. So I have a sort of a flow chart here and a block diagram showing the various components that are involved. Across the top is the audio-video flow that is going from back and forth from the UCMA application to Link. Once we have the audio-video flow going in an audio-video call, and actually an audio call, another pair of components that are involved are the speech recognition connector, which you see on the left, and the speech synthesis connector, which you see on the right. Those are connected to the audio-video flow. And then there are a couple of components that are part of the speech API, namely the speech recognition engine, which you see in the lower left, and the synthesizer, which you see in the lower right. The audio that I spoke comes from the audio-video flow into the speech recognition connector, and then via a stream to the speech recognition engine, which produces the recognition results. When it comes time to synthesize some speech, there is a string of text is fed into the synthesizer, and that is passed by way of a stream to the speech synthesis connector, which makes its way onto the audio-video flow. So I have these things color-coded to give you an indication of what API they belong to, with the orange UCMA, the blue speech, and then the stream objects are from the .NET framework. So to set up for speech recognition, there are several things you need to do. You need to create a call flow. My UCMA application is one that creates an outbound call. You could just as easily make it so that the UCMA application just waited for an incoming call. That's not the way I did it for historical reasons, not for any other meaningful reasons. But we need a call flow from somewhere. The next thing you do is create a speech recognition connector, and then you start it and using the start method, and that creates the stream object. You need to attach the speech recognition connector to the call flow. You need to create a speech recognition engine instance. You need to create a grammar and load it into the speech recognition engine. And I'll talk about the grammar in just a little bit. This is I built a GRXML grammar, SRGS XML grammar. There are also APIs that you can create grammars on the fly using managed code. I just chose to create an XML grammar. It's a very small one. We'll look at it in just a few minutes. After you have the grammar, you need to register for recognition events, and then you need to set the audio stream as the input to the recognition engine. So I won't really go through this, but the comments that I have here pretty much follow the steps that I laid out in the previous slide. Here is the code that comes from the example that we saw on the UCMA application. This is the code that you saw running. These are all the things that I did and described in the previous slide. Now we'll take a look at the grammar here, because this is big enough so that it didn't really fit on one PowerPoint page. What I've done is broken this down into the main rule and then another rule that has a list of some of the cities in it. I say some because I wanted it to fit on a relatively small screen, so I cut some of them out. What this rule does, it's setting up some objects up at the top. Up near the top, this again is the main rule, and the semantic items that I'm interested in are something called origination, which is the city you're flying from, and destination, which is the city you're flying to. Those are the semantic items I'd like to pull out of the audio stream. This rule recognizes one of the following items: I would like to fly, I want to fly, I want a ticket. After that, it will recognize the word from in the audio, And then it will, then the rule ref is a reference to another rule called cities, and that's a list of 18 cities, of which we'll see a smaller number. If it makes a match with one of the cities in that cities rule, then it sets these variables, origination and destination, to the cities that it finds. So going through this again, you can say, I want to fly, I would like to fly, I want a ticket, and then from, and then some city that's in the list, and then to, and then some other city that's in the list. And this rule will return the semantic items, including the whatever words you said, like I want to fly and so forth, to a handler for recognition in my code in my UCMA code. We'll take a look at the next rule, which is just a list of the cities.
So let's pause for a second. Can we go back to the last slide? Because I have a few questions for clarification. So the way speech, what I'm understanding what you're saying is the way speech recognition works is you need to specify a grammar,
right,
and this is what the recognition engine uses in order to pull out meaning from this audio that it's
right.
receiving. Okay. And so these rules that you're specifying in the XML, this XML doc, so this is an SRGS?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's like a...
Which is speech recognition grammar specification.
Okay, so this is a standard.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And so it's recognizing, so if you say, you know, I want to fly from Dallas to Seattle, so it recognizes that sentence. But then you've got these, you mentioned these tags here.
Right.
So these are the points in the grammar where you're telling the recognition engine, when you get a result, we're going to interpret that in a certain way.
Yes, and we're going to, if we get a match with an item in the cities rule, namely a city,
mm-hmm.
then not only it's not going to be just the city that's matched, but there is, we're going to get a semantic result.
A semantic
and
result.
We'll see that in the next slide.
So a semantic result is different from the actual, from what the person said. So,
right.
So like the semantic result could be whatever you want to define.
Yes.
Okay.
You don't want to define something radically different.
Right. But
what I've done in the next rule is that if someone says, for example, Seattle, the semantic result that's going to be returned will be Seattle, Washington. If someone says Atlanta, and there's a match, then the semantic result that's returned will be Atlanta, Georgia.
So the whole point is taking what the person said, recognizing that, but then converting that into some value that your application can actually consume.
Yes.
Okay.
And just to say a little bit more here, if I say I would like to fly, which is the first item that I have in my one-of list of items, then that result is just going to come right through without any change. I'm not doing anything special with that. The only thing I'm doing special with are the cities and what I'm doing there is returning something slightly different from what the user said. Namely, I'm going to attach the, I have a small enough list of cities that there's no duplication, and there's no ambiguity. So the result that I return will go a step beyond what the user said by adding the name of the state.
Right.
If you had multiple airports in the database and someone said Seattle, would it disambiguate those? I assume you could write the functionality into it where it would present a disambiguator, say these are the two Seattle airports, which one do you want? Like New York City.
Right, so
right.
Which airport, right? Well, I'm sure you could.
Right. Well, you could. I guess you could have some rules in there so that if you had a place, trying to make this a little bit more general than that, but,
okay.
But if you have, but to use your example, if you had a place like New York City that has JFK and LaGuardia and some others, I think, and someone wanted to fly to New York, then I suppose you have some logic to...
disambiguate or some type, yeah.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, there would definitely have to be some logic in there. That, the user would have to specify which of the... which of the airports?
So, yeah, so we're getting into some of those quirks of speech development where, you know, it's a little bit different from a graphical UI. In a voice UI, you actually have to deal with some of these disambiguation issues.
Right. So I'm going to move on to the cities rule, which is very simple. It's just a list of a few cities. And if we focus on one of the first item there is if there's a match made, the user's speech, if there's a match made with the word Atlanta, then what is returned as the semantic result is Atlanta, Georgia. And the same is true for all the rest. The actual grammar that I use is a little bit longer than what we see here. I chopped some of the cities out just so that things would fit on the slide and it would be possible to see. So moving on here, let's look at what happens to set up for speech synthesis. You need to create a speech synthesis connector. You need to attach it to the call flow. You need to create a speech synthesizer instance. You need to create a speech audio format info, which specifies the frequency of the audio, such as 8K hertz or 16K hertz, and whether the audio is going to be monaural or monaural or stereo, and what type of encoding will be performed. I think that's correct. There are several things that you set up in a speech audio format info so that everything matches up with how the synthesized audio is encoded. You need to set the output of the synthesizer to the audio stream. You need to register for synthesizer events. And finally, you need to start the speech synthesizer connector instance. Moving on, here's the code. And the code that I show here just makes concrete the steps that I said in the previous slide. So you can see in the first line of code there that I'm creating a speech synthesis connector, and then I'm attaching the audio video flow that again is the flow between the UCMA application and the Link client. This is where the audio is traveling along this code. I create a speech synthesizer instance, and then the line below that, I'm creating a speech audio format info instance with 16K hertz as the frequency, and the 16 represents the number of bits per sample, and then the last argument there is that we're going to do this in mono.
So this audio is coming out of the UCMA bot. So there isn't, you know, you're just using the Link client for the data channel, right? You don't actually need it could be a dumb phone.
Right. Okay. This is just what's coming out of all of this.
Okay. Okay.
So this part is, this is kind of the core of what the recognition, what the UCMA application is doing when it recognizes some speech. I have here my handler for the speech recognized event. Most of the stuff at the top, I'm setting up strings that will be used for both the speech synthesis that gets sent, the audio that gets sent over to the Link client. And there's also a string, it's a different string, that gets sent over the context channel, and that string is chopped up into pieces and then displayed in the user interface and the conversation window extension on the link client. If you recall seeing that after I said something, there was a form on the link client that said destination, that said origination city, and it displayed the city that I said. There was another little output window that displayed the destination city and a final little window that gave a price, and that's all. All of that is handled in here.
So the key here is this recoResult.semantics. This is where you're pulling out. So when you specify the tag in the grammar,
right?
This is where you access the semantic results.
Exactly. Okay.
And so this is all completely custom. It looks like.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. So I set up the grammar to send back to return semantic results, mm-hmm. and then I have a handler that knows the format of these recognition results, that structure of recognition results, and just digs right in and pulls out the information that it needs.
Awesome.
As long as there's a recognition was made. So as long as the reco result is not equal to null, then it goes and builds up a string that consists of the origination city, a semicolon, and the destination city, and it makes up a price. That string goes over the wire through the context channel to the link context window extension of the Silverlight application. And then finally, almost at the very bottom there, I build up a similar string that is my prompt that says, and we didn't hear it, it says, your flight from Seattle, Washington to Dallas, Texas is now confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay. It's pretty easy.
And then after recognition, the way I have things set up is that the application will, you can say multiple things because of the choice of the how I set up the speech recognizer, and how you turn this off is there was an exit button on there, and that causes that sends a message to the UCMA application, and once that happens, the UCMA application resumes its main thread and shuts everything down.
So if it was an IVR, you would wire up to a different event. So you'd basically detect when somebody just hangs up the call, and then that would shut things down.
Yeah, you could do that. You know, you could have it just do. Yeah, there are a lot of different things that you could do.
Right. Awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
So a few selfish questions before we take anyone else's. So what about, I know we support voice XML. Is that radically different?
Pretty much
radically different. All right.
In the sense that, would you say that?
Well, the voice XML standard, I mean, there's a very well documented specification, and it is just a different way to construct your application that is in fact centered around the whole, speech recognition and how the application responds to that, and it's you might say a more higher level object model around which you can think about your application.
Okay.
So it is. May say a layer above what we've been talking about so far in this presentation.
In some sense, they're very similar in that they do speech recognition and synthesis,
yep.
But in the way that you would approach them, the approach is quite different.
So in you're saying it's a layer above, so...
So for instance, we talk about grammars here.
Right.
Voice XML applications certainly rely on speech recognition grammars. And so what you're doing here is that with the voice XML approach, you are thinking about the... how your your service or your application will want to respond to a call, how the user utters, how you present menus. The dialogue becomes more of a very first-class construct
in okay.
object model. So you have to really think about how you present at any given time, what options are presented, how you want to respond to a given utterance, and then how you flow from one state to the next. It's all built into the HTML design. So
it sounds like it's tailored for a lot of those challenges that, or I don't know if you'd say challenges, but a lot of the choices, the design choices that you'd be making for a voice solution. And that would be very different from, say, writing a graphic UI. Would you say that? So, like,
it is similar in the sense that you do have to think about how the user experience flows from one state to the next. So it's not unlike the graphical UI, typical UI design.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, I mean, it is very thought out as a layer above which you don't think about so much about the grammar specifications that you want to do, the layer above where you want to see how the user, the different user states will be.
Right. The overall structure of the mm-hmm. interaction.
That's right.
With the user.
Okay. So, and Voice XML is a standard that's out there. People can search it up and do that. And another one last follow-up question, sorry, just noticing, so you were showing this grammar and you mentioned, oh, well, we could have a bunch of city names. So an actual, in a real-world solution, they would probably generate this grammar, like, say, nightly based on, out of a database of cities, something like that. So it could be this massive, you know, like U.S. cities grammar, potentially.
And there, and Doc could probably address this. I think he's more familiar with this than I am. But the speech platform SDK comes with a bunch of tools for tuning grammars and so forth. It seems like there's about 10 different
tools, yeah.
10 different tools that are, or more that are available for all sorts of things of that nature.
So. What are those tools you provide? I mean, it sounds like we're getting into an area where maybe people who aren't used to voice development, maybe they don't even know some of these issues they need to think about.
So we can provide certainly a link to the speech SDK.
Right.
The SDK that provides the tools.
And I have in my PowerPoint.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we do have a very well-documented set of tools, so we can certainly provide links to that.
And those tools are compatible with the Microsoft.speech API?
That's correct. Okay.
So are they getting these installed with the UCMA SDK? Do we know that? Or do they have to? So they may actually already have those tools.
Yeah, the speech SDK?
Yeah.
Yeah, those were, they used to be installed.
They still are.
Okay. So
it's a separate download, but yeah, I mean, the UCMA SDK should be pointing to the speech SDK.
I see. It points to the download
with
the tools. Okay. Great. So so I'm sharing the questions on our monitor here in the room. It's difficult to see, but we'll start reading through these in the remaining 10 minutes that we have. So the first question is,
what is it? Dictation grammar.
Yeah.
Right?
Are you able to see any? Yeah. So it's saying that dictation grammar is missing from UCMA 3.0. Is it included in 4.0? I'm going to guess that would be a no.
And it's no. And really the whole grammar part is really not part of UCMA itself, but it's part of Microsoft.speech and that whole speech platform SDK. And I'll let Doc.
What you can do is, it is not included. You can attempt to build your own dictation-like grammar. There is what we have in the SDK tools is support for the ARPA format, in addition to the SRGS grammar format that Mark's already covered. The ARPA format is, I'll provide the link here. You just, essentially, it does require effort on your part to essentially come up with the ARPA format, the actual content of the ARPA format. But if you scroll down, you'll see what I'm talking about. The ARPA format essentially allows for support for, like I say, dictation-like support, depending on the vocabulary of what you want to enable. You will come up with a series of what you call a probabilistic model of the words that you hope to recognize. We provide it as a means by which, if you have a very specialized domain, it becomes particularly useful. But in terms of providing a general everyday dictation-like grammar, this would be the means by which you could do it. But the bottom line is at UCMA SDK does not provide a built-in dictation grammar.
So in my experience, you usually with a dictation grammar, you go through training, like a training process for the recognition engine to learn your voice. Is that
so? In the case of desktop Windows speech recognition, that is certainly true. On the server platform, because we're talking here about, our servers that could arbitrarily, provide speech recognition for an arbitrarily large number of disparate number of people. I mean, this is basically where the training doesn't much apply.
Okay.
But it is a interesting idea, nonetheless.
Right. Okay. So next question, what about new language packs in UCMA 4.0?
So new language packs, these are the available runtime downloads you can access for the Speech SDK. The number of languages has certainly grown.
Yeah.
But you can take a look at that list, and you'll just, like I say, download whichever languages you're interested in, both for speech recognition as well as for TTS.
Great. So you basically, the innovation that's going on with this Microsoft.Speech API, we basically just get to use that in UCMA. What about new TTS voices?
So, like I say, the set of languages that you'll see in that web page will give you the entire list of what's
okay. So that includes that as well.
TTS, yep.
And there was a specific question about CNE EU language support. I'm not sure what CNE, I'm not familiar with that. Maybe they could clarify, or do you know what they might mean by CNE?
See what?
Central and Eastern Europe.
Oh, Central and Eastern. So take a look at that link that Doc just pasted into the IM window. And you can see what is available. So the next question, can we create a static speech recognition engine where every call will register the speech recognition events and a connector will attach the stream?
So here's my response. You can certainly write a static helper that constructs the speech recognition engine. You can do that to initialize whatever you need to do for the event handlers as well as for any corresponding objects. But if you're asking about creating a single static speech recognition engine instance, that probably will not be what you'd want to do, if only because your application is presumably servicing an arbitrarily large number of incoming calls, and it just doesn't make sense. You're going to want to have one speech recognition engine
per call.
Per call.
Okay. Because you're potentially dealing with race conditions if you get into...
Well, the fact is, think of it as for every given single input audio input channel, you'll want to have a single speech recognition to handle that.
Okay.
And if, you know, there is certainly a design where you can build a, what you call a speech recognition pool. And you can say, oh, I'll just keep, say, n number of speech recognition instances alive at any moment, and I'll just service out from this pool as calls come in.
Nice.
Yeah, that does allow you to achieve some level of optimizations in terms of having to forego the time needed to construct the engine, load the grammars, etc.
I see.
That is certainly
so you're front-loading all that by instantiating everything in advance.
At a time. And then just,
okay.
Would you need to dispose some of them occasionally and then create new ones to keep new instances?
In general, you should not need to do that. The idea around the recognition pool is if you can design it such that you know ahead of time the exact set of grammars you're going to be expected to recognize against, then you can certainly prompt the speech recognition engines in advance.
Okay.
So you can keep them around.
Great. Next question. When running applications on virtual servers, what is the best way to write code to not require a sound card? We've been writing a few apps, and they all require a virtual sound card. Is there a way to write them without it?
So there is an API on the Microsoft.speech recognition engine. You can do emulation, which is basically you don't have to use an actual hardware, audio input hardware. Instead, you would be able to, let's say, if you want to test your application, you could have your test code driver effectively feed in to the speech recognition engine exactly what you wanted to recognize against. By doing that, you can essentially forego the whole dependency on the audio system. Right? So type in the text you wanted to recognize, and boom, it will return that as a recognition result. Alternatively, there is also an API on the Microsoft.speech recognition engine where you can feed in an audio file, and then the system will just essentially consume that and treat that as it was an actual spoken utterance from the audio hardware input.
And that's
process it that and then generate the...
There's the method you set something as input.
Yes.
So what I did was I set the stream coming out of the speech recognition connector as the input, but there are several different versions of that same function to allow various possibilities for stuff coming into the recognition engine.
That's right. So you can go straight into the speech recognition engine, and I'll just paste the link.
Great. Next question. Speech recognized inaccuracies. Sometimes randomly and only in the case of unrecognized words, they recognize as words of the grammar. Is there any experience on that? So it sounds like sometimes the grammar is triggering recognition. Yeah, so how would you deal with those situations?
I guess my first question, first of all, might be how large this grammar may be. But I would say that in general, the speech recognition will always be a technology that still, is not 100% foolproof. There is always situations for which any speech recognition engine system will have to deal with when it comes to things like background noise and the environment you may be in. Is there background chatter and there's accents and people having different
ways people speak the same word.
Yep. So that's why in an IVR they sometimes they'll say it sounds like you said
mm-hmm.
or I think you said yeah. whatever. Okay, just to clarify.
I would say that in general, since we're talking here, you have a very specific question about, we're talking about grammars here, and I think what you're pointing out is that even if you were to speak a completely audible but, clearly enunciated a word that was not in the grammar. You're saying that it still recognized that word as a grammar? That would be my primary question for Stefan. And if that's the case, we generally don't see that, but in the event that that does happen, there is, in the SRGS specification, there is support for what we call a wildcard rule. What is a wildcard rule? I can paste it in the link, but essentially it's telling it's part of the SRGS specification, and what it tells the speech recognition is that, hey, if you don't recognize anything else in these set of rules, in this rule, I will just tell you that whatever you spoke, I'm just going to treat that as a wild card, and I'm just going to pretend as if I recognize, but I'm not going to actually tell you what the recognition was. So it's basically, think of it as a fallback. And if nothing else triggers in the grammar, it is a fallback on which point you as the application can then be aware that, oh, okay, seems like nothing else matched.
I see. And so then you can...
And then in the recognition result would inform you that, oh, okay, this is a wild card. And then I would say, okay, for me as an application developer, I can then reprompt it. I could perhaps reprompt the user or do some other application logic to help get either a better response from the user or basically deal with that contingency. So that is to deal with a scenario which, again, Stefan would have to clarify, but it is where someone clearly enunciated a word and yet it's recognized it as part of the grammar, then it attempts to use that, the wild card, as a solution. If he's, on the other hand, saying that it's just inaccuracies in general and how do you can improve this, one thing you can do in general is use the SDK tools to tune the grammar, verify that the grammar itself is behaving in a way that is consistent with your application.
We're not getting into the more advanced programming techniques, but I remember something about confidence. Like, doesn't the recognition engine return a confidence score for a result?
Okay. That's right.
So if it's a low confidence, then maybe you'd want to set some kind of threshold.
That is correct. Yes.
It will also return several recognition results with their probability of recognition, something like that.
Okay. So there's some backup plans. So we're running out of time, so let's just move on at this point. So the next question is just generally about the Spanish language pack. They just feel like it's not recognizing words. So perhaps they need to tune their grammar, or do you have any other theories on why they might not be getting good recognition?
Our experience with this is that they're, if application developers are finding that there's some inaccuracies, you gotta make sure, the grammar itself, the language, the XML lang attribute that is part of the SRGS grammar specification, make sure it is the language for which you are targeting.
Right.
Okay, because that needs to be consistent with the language that you specify for your engine.
Oh, so you're saying the grammar could be, say, ENUS, but the engine is Spanish.
It's possible. Right. So I'm just, that's sometimes overlooked by developers that they inadvertently don't keep that consistent. So, I'd have to get a better sense of what inaccuracies that Benjamin is experiencing.
I'd say follow up on the forums with this and we can look into it some more. Definitely post your questions on the forums and we... We'll continue our conversation there. As far as the Brazilian Portuguese question about the TTS and speech recognition, I would encourage you to look at the link that Doc posted with the different language packs, and you can take a look to see if that's supported. So we're actually out of time now. I hope this was a good overview of the speech API, Microsoft.speech. Doc, is there anything final comments you want to make before we finish up?
No, I was just the quick answer to the question about Portuguese Brazilian.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it is supported. Great. Fantastic. So, yeah, take a look at that. So we're talking about the UCMA forums. Go ahead and continue to post your speech questions there because you're the UCMA developers. And I got some feedback that maybe you're feeling like you're not getting the same amount of love, you know, as you are with your UCMA specific questions. I'm going to look into that, and we'll try to get you the same level of support that you're getting with your other questions. So we're getting kicked out of the room at this point, so sorry I can't take any more questions at this point. Continue to post questions on the forums, and we'll continue the conversation there. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Doc Lee and Mark Parker, for lending your expertise here today. I was really appreciate the time you spent. I know this was valuable for everyone who attended. So with that, we'll see you next time. Also post on the forums any suggestions for future roundtable sessions. Today's discussion was a suggestion that was posted on the forum, so we're listening to your suggestions, and we'll see you again next time.